So what with the resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 112. Hope you all enjoyed our last show, because this week it's all about our retrospective on the Clone Wars series. It's been 10 years since that series premiered. I got to see
Please don't. I already feel like really old this year.
But hey, this is cool. Like, it's Clone Wars has been around for 10 years. All those stories we can reminisce and talk about and kind of talk about the benefits of it. So if you haven't seen Clone Wars, definitely listen to this and kind of brush up on it and maybe go ahead and watch it. It's still all on Netflix, so it's definitely worth checking out. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello.
How's the weather over there, Danya?
Nope, it's basically like the pits of hell. It's awful. Someone actually managed to sink into melted tarmac yesterday and got trapped and had to be extricated by like the emergency services because he was stuck. Because, yeah, the tarmac had melted. Yep, it's really hot here right now, and our infrastructure just is not built to deal with sustained heat. It has not rained in over 20 days. It is very weird. I'm enjoying the sunshine, but like, I'm enjoying it in the way that it's nice to see the sun and go out and be able to do stuff, and it's really lovely. But at night, it's just the worst because it's too hot. You can't cool anything down. We have no air conditioning. We have no nothing. I'm just dying slowly.
Well, don't die slowly, but we have someone on the other side of the pond who is usually living in Hoth. Hey, Caitlin, how you doing?
Good. You?
Good. You cool in Canada?
No, we were ridiculously hot as well, but actually late last night, the temperature dropped drastically, so I'm back in my comfort zone.
Well, that's good. I know it's been hot here too. You know, it was 105 degrees, and my parents were saying, "Oh, it's 110 here in LA." So it's definitely hot here in the U.S. also. But I got air conditioning, so I'm okay, Danya.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but you've got air conditioning. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. We talked all about this a couple episodes ago. Anyway,
I know.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including Last Shot, which I've listened to, and we're going to be talking about next week on our show, which is the Woo-hoo! Han Solo book. I know, right? Did any of you guys listen to the audiobook, or you just read it?
I read it. I'm faster reading than listening to audiobooks, so...
I am faster reading, too.
But I like the audiobook. Caitlin, did you like the audiobook where it kind of split between the different voices of young Han and or young Lando and older Lando?
Or they young did Han a older really Han? Good job.
Yeah, I really enjoy the audiobook. I like to kind of dabble in both audiobooks and actual reading, just because sometimes it's fun to, while driving and stuff like that, to listen to the audiobook. But definitely check it out, audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. We've also launched our Patreon, guys. Check it out, patreon.com/resistantradiopodcast. You can join us in our Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, and After Dark episodes, which I have to post one that me and Ben recorded the other day, which is kind of entertaining. If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, that's cool. We understand. We also have merchandise available for sale. T-shirts and button packs are available on our website. So check that out, resistanceradio.net. Guys, it is time for the news, and we have some kind of cool news things to talk about. And first one, because we've been talking about Solo so much, was an article from Screen Rant about how Star Wars' biggest failure could have been a success. And we were just talking about this a little bit before the show. You know, we talked about this when our Solo episode, of how they were kind of disappointed with the turnout of the weekend of the Solo premiere. And I think, Caitlin, you said you even got your Solo tickets like the day before, if I remember correctly, or just, you know, fairly quick from when the film was going to show. Is that right?
Yeah, and which is funny because, like, Last Jedi, I unfortunately didn't think too much of it because it's a small town and most people are not planners here. So I waited till like 2 days before The Last Jedi was released to book, and I, based off of other people's schedule, I couldn't go see it till Sunday. But for Solo, it was like the day before, and I'm pretty much sure, like if I remember correctly, we had our pick of seats essentially. Most people didn't know that it was even out.
Yeah, no, I think we talked about that too. It was kind of interesting. And when we looked at, we did a toy episode on Solo, and it was kind of one of those things where Wookiee Weekends was kind of like a non-starter. So this article is really interesting because Disney really kind of stepped up their game. Disney kind of interfered with Lucasfilm a little bit on this one. Lucasfilm asked Disney to change the release date of Solo from the May release date, which is historically, not the new films, but historically a Star Wars release date, which was the prequels and the original series were all in May or June. It all just depends on kind of when they release. They're all summer films, like the beginning of the summer films. And with the problems they had with Solo, it's one of those things where, or the problems they had with Solo, while during production, Lucasfilm actually asked Disney to go ahead and push it. But Disney rejected it, citing frustration with the numerous other Star Wars delays. Now, this does make sense that, you know, they pushed back the original release of Force Awakens to December. They also had frustrations and delays in Rogue One, where Troy Gillian had to go ahead and do some secondary shots while they were editing the film. And they even had pushbacked Last Jedi to a December date. But Solo, they were gung-ho, even though they essentially reshot the film with a different director halfway through. They kept that May date. What do you guys think about this? Do you think it would have done better if it was a Christmas release than a May release?
Yes.
I'm not sure that I know that it would have done better, necessarily. What I think it may have allowed them to do is take their time a little bit more. Because I think the whole thing with it is just that production was disrupted so much. They had to do so much in so little time. And you know that when it comes to stuff like that, in order to be able to, for example, speed up production, you have to pour, like, a ton more money into that because you need to essentially gain more resources in order to still meet that original release date. Whereas I feel like if they'd have paced it out, taken more time, not necessarily, like, I guess things would be more polished. They would have been able to take just a tiny bit more care with things. Not saying that Solo was a bad film. It was, I guess, exactly what I was expecting, but, you know, it just would have been nice for Ron Howard, I guess, to just be able to take a little bit more time to get it exactly how he wanted, rather than trying to get it to the best possible version that it could be in the time frame that he'd been given. Those couple of extra months just would have meant that he could have executed things a little bit more.
And I think, like, going off that, like, it would have given them more time to, like, assess and do what they felt, more time to play with it, but also the fact it would have given them more time to market it, and it would have given them less competition.
Yeah, I think the marketing would have been a big thing, especially since, Caitlin, you saw and experienced the same thing I did. People just said, oh, I didn't know it came out. And the Wookiee Weekends, the toys were just not marketed. You know, when you look at a franchise like Star Wars, it definitely is something that the toys makes the franchise. You know, if kids are not excited, they're not going to ask parents to go. And you also have things like, not only did they have Avengers they're going up against and Deadpool, they also had right afterwards, you know, a couple weeks later was Incredibles release. And when you look at half their market is not just people in nostalgia wanting to see the film that are older, but kids want to see these movies too, and if they have the choice to go see Incredibles or Star Wars, you know, I will say I love Incredibles, you know, in Star Wars, but you know, it's a difficult choice. You know, if I got to go see a movie tomorrow, I might choose Incredibles because I've already seen Solo once. Versus that kind of repeat viewing. I'll be honest, I've only seen Solo 3 times, whereas all the other films I've seen a lot more. Take it, my life situation's a little bit different. Having a little one, I don't have time. I don't have the luxury to just kind of hop off and go after dinner one night to a movie. I got other responsibilities now. But it's just a different perspective, I think. With them releasing it in May, and the advertising just wasn't there, and what they were up against compared to what they had in the summer or their winter releases of the other films. But
yeah, it was odd all over. And I mean, releasing a film at that time of year, I'm not saying that a Star Wars film can't do well, like just before like the summer release calendar, you know, when you expect the big summer blockbusters, the big hard-hitting movies to happen. But I think what has happened now is there was that shift. Star Wars became almost an event. You know, doing it at Christmas time meant that people were planning around, like, going out with family to see it, going out with friends to see it, you know, when they're getting ready and planning things around the holidays, just being like, oh, well, the new Star Wars film is out, let's all go and see that together. And I know that happened quite a lot for me, which is how I ended up seeing it multiple times. Seeing it earlier in the year, even though it's more aligned with, you know, how it used to be when it used to be released, it just felt really different. And I think that, especially this year, there were so many hugely anticipated films that came out around the same time as it, that it just didn't get the attention that it needed to give it that little bit of an extra push. So there were a lot of factors that contributed to the fact that it didn't perform as well as it could have. Because you had, like, the major one is Infinity War. People were still going to see that, you know? People were going for multiple viewings of it. So, it just, if they're going to shift the films back to a May release date or an early summer release date, I think they need to be a little bit more cognizant of, like, what other films are being released at the same time and what that means by the fact that they're basically turning it from being, like, an event movie in terms of when it comes out in December, it becomes part of the holiday. So people specifically make a point of going to see it and planning to go and see it. Whereas when you kind of push yourself into that summer blockbuster kind of frame, you're just one of a million other films coming out at that time that you're vying for, like, the audience's attention, and it's split so much more at that time of year. So I don't know, there was something about Star Wars being shifted to, like, a Christmas time release that just worked for me a lot more.
Yeah, and, like, for me, like, I mean, my situation's a little bit different because I live in a small rural city. And it being close to Christmas benefits me because then I go home to visit family and I go with family to go see Star Wars because that's how I was introduced to Star Wars, was family-based. So it becomes more of a family gathering. Whereas in May, like I asked a friend if she wanted to go and we went.
Yeah, it's definitely that. Like, I'm looking at the lifetime so far of Solo, a Star Wars Story. And just to put it in perspective of a lifetime, you know, Solo's been out for over a month now. It's in its second month. It's still pulling in about $1 million a week, which is, you know, $1 million is a lot. But when you look at the grand scheme of things of Force Awakens and Rogue One and Last Jedi all breaking $1 billion worldwide, you know, right now, the lifetime worldwide of Solo is only $371 million. Which is not a bad take for a movie, but for a Star Wars movie that they essentially shot twice, it is kind of bad financially, but it's not something that's going to prevent Disney or Lucasfilm from working and continue to make movies. It just is one of those things where there's a lot of factors, I think, in hindsight that they have to look at and kind of digest. I will say that one of the other things that they talk about here is the troubles with Solo also is what a reason why we also got J.J. Abrams back at Episode 9 and the removal of Colin Trevorrow from Episode 9 because of the problems they had with Lord and Miller in Solo. So I think Kathleen Kennedy is learning from, you know, as they go about making these movies, kind of to kind of preemptively prevent having to reshoot some of the films and stuff like that. So anything else about Solo's success or lack thereof sometimes?
No, I think we've covered it quite extensively at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of all we can get from it. So, we do have some fun things. We are going to talk a little bit about StarWars.com has announced its Fan Awards for 2018, allowing us to showcase some of the most impressive creative people in our galaxy. Videos, shorts. They have video options, best animation, best stop motion, best comedy, best choreography, best visual effects, audience choice, filmmaker select, and spirit of fandom. There's fan awards for photos, best scene-inspired photo, best family portrait, best throwback photo, best original concept, funniest, best pet photography. Yeah, best pet photography. Best Star Wars food presentation, best in show and audience choice, and more, and the similar things for visual art, which is really cool. So you can check that out at StarWarsFanAwards.com or StarWars.com. They have a link to it. This is some really cool things. We'll see this stuff pop up at on both the Star Wars show and also at Celebration. A couple years ago, I think 2 years ago, we had Noel on the show who did one of the Star Wars fan films. And he was in the running for one of the winners, and they announced at Celebration. Unfortunately, he didn't win, but we talked to him about his experience making a Star Wars fan film. Danya, do you have any experience with the Fan Awards?
Not the Fan Awards specifically, but I went to a couple of parties where some of the filmmakers were, and they were mingling and just chilling out and stuff like that. So I got to talk to a couple of them, and it was really, really cool. I remember watching a few.
Very cool.
When they were released. So that was really cool. I think it's a really weird time for this to have come out as well. Because this fandom right now is in like this weird flux of basically tearing itself apart slowly. Yeah. Particularly with the petition for like, or the fundraiser that someone attempted to do to remake The Last Jedi, which was the weirdest, dumbest thing.
Ryan Johnson hopes that they go through with it. they supposedly have funding, so Ryan Johnson hopes they go through with it. I will say, you're right. Right now, Star Wars fandom is interesting. Like, a lot of news outlets have picked some of this up because of the online bullying and things that's happened to cast and crew of Last Jedi. You know, I think we've talked about this multiple times on the show. I think it's one of those things where there's a very vocal group. I've seen this in other communities, not just Star Wars.
I know it's not isolated to Star Wars at all.
I usually see it like more in game communities, where people call the community, you know, the community's toxic and stuff like that. That's why I stopped playing a game or something like that. But it's creeped up in Star Wars, and I think it's also one of those things. Star Wars is a huge fandom. I mean, absolutely huge fandom. And I've been part of it for a long time, and I know Danya has. And Caitlin, I know you've been a fan for a long time, but I don't know how much you were in, like, going to conventions and stuff with it. Remind me.
Yeah, no, it was a very private fan experience for me.
Okay. Which is totally fine. Like, you know, that's one of the things I love about Star Wars is you could be walking on the street and just like, I think I wear a Star Wars shirt and people will comment on it and we can have a conversation and go deeper. You know, it's you don't have to be like the person that dresses up in every cosplay and stuff like that to be a fan of something. But I think this community has a very vocal, small selection small group of people who are very angry at some decisions, and they, you know, they're just causing a problem for the rest of the fans that just want to have fun and enjoy something that means a lot to them. So I do think this is actually probably a good thing, because it allows the fans to come together, create something that, you know, the fandom is very creative. Everything from, like I said, visual arts for photo actual art, and then also like videographers and filmmakers get to do stuff together. Plus, if you're making a movie, what better way than to actually use like members of the 501st and show off your cosplay efforts and armor and making a Stormtrooper/Jedi battle or something like that. So I think it's a good time for the fandom to come together and just kind of celebrate why we love Star Wars again.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was getting at. It's like this weird like moment of flux where like there's a lot of the fandom that's like lashing out at everyone, anyone who in any way is celebrating Star Wars and what it stands for and stuff like that. And to be honest, at this point, I think I've given up trying to argue that point. Like, these are people who are very much not going to change their mind. They've got this very fixed idea of what they think Star Wars should be, and anything that strays outside of that is wrong. And there's nothing that you can tell them that'll change that opinion, even when they've got all of this content coming to them that is actually Star Wars. But this, the Fan Awards is always great because it really does then put the spotlight back on the fans who are really creative, who embrace Star Wars, who embrace the universe and are inspired by it and create and make their own stuff and really just help expand that universe out. They keep it alive. They give it a life that it deserves. And they basically, they have so much respect for where that all came from. And so it's all at once a weird time to be doing this, but also I think a great time to be celebrating the parts of fandom that deserve to be celebrated over giving a voice and a spotlight to the absolute idiots who are looking to tear down the whole thing because a movie didn't pander to their specific expectations that they had going in.
You know what's really funny is, like, I kind of see both sides of the argument, but I don't see how people take it that far. Like, I think I said this from day one. Even Luke Skywalker having a beard was not what I had in my mind of what Luke Skywalker did. But the more I watched it, the more I understood, and I get the story, and I like it for what it is. If I was the director and writer of episode, you know, 8, would I have told that exact story? Probably not. But, you know, I'm happy the way it is, and I'm excited to see where episode 9 takes us and what's going to happen. And I think there's a lot of parallels between the, you know, Last Jedi and the original trilogy and even the prequel. So I'm happy with it. I just think it's one of those things where it's funny that people can't have, you know, can't look at a piece of art, because, you know, the film is a piece of art objectively and taken, and even if you don't like it, like, well, it wasn't made for you.
I mean, there are absolutely parts of it that you can levy criticism at, and we have, but equally there is so much about it to love, and it changed the Star Wars universe in a huge way. It did things that were very, very, very different. And I think one of the great things about it is, depending on where you are in fandom, it's given us a lot to talk about. But just the people who are basically bullying, like, Kelly Marie Tran off Instagram, the same people who bullied Daisy Ridley off there previously, you know, they're not worth our time. They're not even worth engaging anymore. So I'm just at the point where I'm like, you know what? You build your own community. If we can build up the positive parts of it, then that's what we do. Drown out the voices with the ones that deserve to be uplifted over the ones that just want to destroy everything.
I agree.
So I have a question. Because, again, most of my, like, fandoming experience have been like a private thing. Like I've not done much of it online for any kind of fandom. But I do recognize that like there's certain Harry Potter movies that greatly divided the fans on who liked it and who hated it. But I don't remember it. And again, maybe it's because it was more of a sheltered experience. I don't remember it getting this visceral of people versus like hate versus like. But you two have both been in the Harry Potter fandom. Did you notice anything to even close to this extent for when movies divided the audience like that?
Yes.
I mean,
oh yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it depends on which part of fandom you're in. If it was about ships, like relationships, absolutely. The Harry Potter fandom absolutely got completely nuts in terms of like how it approached that sort of thing. Like, especially between people who liked Harry and Hermione together versus people who liked Hermione and Ron together. And the movies very much played into the idea of Harry and Hermione much more than they did with Hermione and Ron. So it set up this expectation versus the books that that was the way that they were going to go. Obviously with everyone who had come from the books knowing that all the foreshadowing was basically building up to Hermione and Ron being together by the end.
Be careful with that. Like, again, I'll just tell you this. Like, it's not just... I was always a Hermione and Ron, you know, shipper, if you will. But yeah, at the same time, like, and even, like, J.K. Rowling kind of said those who are Harry Hermione shippers are delusional. Like, she added fuel to the fire of the debate and stuff like that.
Oh, which she did.
Meant to be fun. But at the same time, there, you know, I can see both sides, because even J.K. Rowling has gone back and said, maybe I should have made it Harry and Hermione in the end.
That interview was taken way out of context. I actually bought the magazine that had that interview in.
But regardless, it's one of those things where I saw more, not just shippers, I actually saw people complain about the books versus the movies, how the movies just left so much out and stuff like that. And
well, yeah, but I meant
didn't like the movies, and you know, people badmouth stuff. But I don't think there's any attacks on any of the actors like we've seen with Star Wars.
Yeah, like, not to the point of like driving people off social media. I think that recently there's been a lot more criticism levied at J.K. Rowling, she's been called out for blocking pretty much anyone who's been criticizing her quite recently in respect to, like, how she's approached, like, Native Americans in her Fantastic Beasts backstory, and also the whole stuff around Johnny Depp being cast as Grindelwald, and that's kind of ended up being like two major points of contention alongside the stuff where basically they're backtracking on like having Dumbledore being explicitly gay and his relationship with Grindelwald as it was explored. So there's a lot of stuff that she's being criticized for specifically, but it hasn't hit the points of like death threats and
some of it's a little bit different just because, like, yes, the original Star Wars came out when there was, like, no internet versus when Harry Potter, like, first became big, there was internet, but we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't, for the most part, Facebook, like, that kind of thing. So that didn't exist in terms of chasing off the actors. But I think, like, I'm thinking, say, like, Prisoner of Azkaban, because Philosopher's Stone and Chamber of Secrets were, yes, they left stuff out, but were very faithful to the book. And then Prisoner of Azkaban took a completely different turn. And it was more of an artistic take, and things changed. And that, a lot of people hated it. But for the same reason, a lot of people liked it. And I know there was a lot of people who were very vocal no matter which side of the fence they were on, but I don't remember it getting as nasty as how divided the fans are for The Last Jedi.
I will say this. I don't think it ever got nasty, but I know specifically what you just mentioned, the Prisoner Azkaban film. Having come from film school and being in film school when that film came out, Alfonso Cuarón, who did it, I thought it was a masterpiece. Today, it's still my favorite Harry Potter film. But I, you know, having been on MuggleCast, I will tell you I am the odd one out thinking it's the best film. With the exception of, you know, I think Eric will say, yeah, it definitely has, as a film by itself, if you didn't take the book into consideration, it's great. But once you look at what it's based on, it definitely is lacking. And I'll agree, it's lacking a whole lot compared to the previous two films and even Goblet of Fire after it. But as a film, I think it is very visually well done. I think it's it tells a concise story to get you through it. And I think it also tackles probably one of the more complex books because of the time turner and the issues that you have with time travel without making it overtly obvious of what's going on. I think they did a really good job in the film. But I'll tell you what ended up happening was I basically ended up avoid talking about it because you start the... It's like politics. You don't talk about it because you don't want to start the argument. And so that's kind of what that... conversation there. So there were definitely hot topics that people just kind of avoided because you enjoy being with people in your same fandom, people who still love the same stuff you do, even if there were certain opinions that were extremely hot button topics. And I know that right there was like definitely one of them. But I do want to briefly, before we move on to a different topic, I just linked you guys to the Star Wars The Last Jedi remake poster that was posted on the 2nd of July. And it has made its rounds, and I will say, just like Rian Johnson and Pablo Hidalgo said, I would love to see this movie if they make it, just for the sake of what it is. It is definitely satire. The person who made it is not part of the remake, it's not part of the remake community, yeah. But if you want to know what it is, it's got a very swole-looking Luke Skywalker with not only a lightsaber, but also a gun. You got Snoke with a overhead projector explaining his backstory in detail, as well as not only his origins and his plan. You have a new Death Star that's not one, but three Death Stars combined. So it's even bigger, right? You got Slave One and the Millennium Falcon there shooting at each other. And the Millennium Falcon's got an extra large blaster on it because, you know, more guns. You got Finn looking at anime through some like holographic thing, which, you know, it's totally crazy. You got Rey making Thanksgiving dinner and Princess Leia as General Leia. Oh yeah, making pork. And you got Princess Leia or General Leia back in her slave bikini as General Leia. And you got BB-8 with Negan from The Walking Dead's baseball bat. And I think it ties it all together. Star Wars The Last Jedi remake, a film by a bunch of dudes from the internet. And that's kind of what you would get. It's pretty ridiculous and all. Oh, and then you also have a Shredder. And when I say a Shredder, I mean literally it's Shredder from the Ninja Turtles body with Kylo Ren's mask. So he's definitely a Shredder there. So it's one of those things where it's kind of a fun joke because that's kind of what would happen if you took everyone's opinion on the internet to try to make a movie. That would be please those people who are complaining. It would be just all over the place bad. But it'd probably be one of the bad things. It'd be so bad that it was good because it was so bad that you made fun of it and you laughed at it and it was good because you were laughing so hard at it. Does that make sense? Like, there are some movies that are that bad that they become good. No? Do I just watch bad movies and laugh at them?
I think there's movies that you laugh at, and then there's this contrived nonsense
and that's what it is. Like, there's certain things that are nonsense. Like, it could be, like I said, Rian Johnson says he hopes they make it, and I would kind of hope they make something this ridiculous.
I think, if anything, it's just so that they can be mocked for their attempt at whatever let's move on.
Well, I think you're right. I think this poster, I'll link to it on our website. It's definitely one of those things where once you see it, you're just like, huh. It's kind of its own thing.
I mean, it's almost certainly as close to what some of these people have been, like, saying that they want. Yeah. So...
But see, here's the thing is, even me, like, I want my Luke Skywalker back the way it was, but I don't want it, like, this is so ridiculous, it's beyond over the top.
Yeah.
But it anyway.
It does mock that, I forget what poster it was, but the one where they try to make Luke look ultra buff.
Oh, from the original poster where he looked super buff.
Anyways, we can move on now.
Moving on. On to something that's good, before we turn our spotlight topic. Star Wars Rebels, the complete fourth season, will arrive on Blu-ray and DVD July 31st. I'm super excited. This will complete my collection. Not only will I have all of Clone Wars on Blu-ray, I'll now have all of Rebels. So I'll be able to watch all my favorite animated Star Wars stuff whenever I feel like it, and I can introduce it to my daughter as she gets older. So I'm super excited for this. Of course, we'll have extras like Star Wars Rebels Recon on it, as well as some unique extras that they haven't announced yet. But I'm kind of excited for this. Like, I will say Season 4 of Rebels was probably my favorite season. It was just so action-packed.
It was great. The end of it, though, still wrecks me. Like, I'm still...
Oh, yeah, that last
I'm
episode...
I'm still not over it.
Oh, no, I agree.
Have you not finished it yet?
No,
I don't have access to it.
So on July 31st, Caitlin is going to binge watch Star Wars Rebels Season 4.
Well, I have to wait to actually like have it shipped to me. So maybe not the 31st, but shortly thereafter.
Well before any type of Rebels panel discussion at Celebration. So,
en français.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So we want to make sure we're done with that. So that's really exciting. I'm excited for it. The next, we have just two more bits of news. So StarWars.com has, in the run-up to San Diego Comic-Con, has announced two things. They have an excerpt from Thrawn Alliances, which is really amazing. And they also posted the cover of the Thrawn San Diego Comic-Con cover, if you will, of Thrawn Alliances. Have you guys looked at this?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was everywhere on social media when it released.
Oh, because it's amazing, right? So, for those who don't know what it is, this is a picture of Thrawn, who, I'll be honest, kind of looks like a little bit of a John Hamm, and Anakin Skywalker. And it really does look amazing. So the excerpt from the book, because the book is going to take place, it sounds like it's going to take place in two eras. It's going to show some exposition backstory, which is the excerpt that they've released. And they also released the audio clip, which is narrated again by Mark Thompson, who I will say the audiobook is just absolutely phenomenal. Like I listen to it again and I get chills when, you know, Mark Thompson talks about Thrawn's real name. Mithra Nurudu, and then you hear Anakin trying to say it, but he can't say it right. It's just amazing. Like, I'm definitely picking up the audiobook for this one. But the excerpt is really good. It's just an interaction between Thrawn and Anakin during the Clone Wars, when Thrawn meets Anakin for the first time. And Thrawn kind of learns a little bit more about the new old, or I guess the Republic. And the Emperor a little bit there. So I'm a fan of the excerpt, and I can't wait till the book comes out. Obviously, the book will come out, and there will be a different cover, which is Thrawn and Vader, because it does take place in between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy with Thrawn. And we'll learn more about Thrawn's character, because we know what happened to Thrawn at the end of Rebels. So this takes place a little bit before that. But it's a team up between Vader and Thrawn, and I'm so excited for this. I want this to be the next standalone film.
A Thrawn movie?
Dude, a Thrawn movie would be so awesome. I mean, like,
movie
it would
or
be...
TV show?
Ooh, TV show. See, here's the thing is, I don't know if I like the movies better or the TV shows better. Because the movie, I get like 2.5 hours, awesome, big budget, you know, amazing. But a TV show, I get like hours upon hours of new stories.
I think for Thrawn, like, his style of I guess in terms of like how he operates would be more suited to television, I think, than a big budget movie. Only because he's very, very strategic, very much more low key. And when you have something like a TV series, you can play that out properly across the whole thing. So if they were going to go and explore Thrawn more, I think I would prefer it in a TV show over a movie, just because they could spend the time dedicated to like his strategic mind and really even dig into like his backstory and stuff like that. I just think on the whole it would probably work out better for that specific character.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Thrawn is just such an integrated character. I would definitely want him to be fleshed out and done, done correctly. But yes, so that's going to be available July 24th. So coming up soon, and I am beyond ecstatic. So definitely check it out if you haven't. If you haven't checked out the first Thrawn book, that's what you should be looking at next before this one. I just can't wait. Alliances is like the book I've been waiting for months now. Like it's been pre-ordered on Amazon and pre-ordered on Audible. Like it's ready to download the day it comes out. So I will say, reading this excerpt and then realizing that they had the audio clip at the bottom of it made me really sad, because then I did it a second time. But it is just done so well. And I would definitely say check out it. I'll link to it. I'll post it on Twitter and Facebook. But I'll definitely post to the page so that way you can listen to the audio clip, because the audiobook is phenomenal. Just like I said, Mark Thompson does such a good job as Thrawn. And last bit of news before we get into Clone Wars is Kerry Russell has been tapped for Star Wars Episode 9. She's worked with JJ previously on movies like Mission Impossible 3. So this is, I don't know if this is like surprising. I guess we're going to start to learn a lot more people who are new characters and are going to be in Episode 9, because now it's slated to start to film. Does this surprise anyone, or?
What, that they're adding new cast members? No. I actually really like Kerry Russell. Obviously, again, we're getting another...
I was thinking the same thing.
You're thinking the same thing. It's another white brunette joining the Star Wars universe. I love Kerry Russell. I think she's... It's going to be really interesting to see her in a Star Wars movie. I think she's a fantastic actress. I will not say that my mind almost immediately jumped to, ooh, Mara Jade, like when I saw her. Like, she would make an incredible Mara Jade. But we're probably never going to get Mara Jade in the Star Wars movies, ever.
At least not as this Mara. We might get a Mara Jade in an exposition early on after what happens after the fall, after the end of Battle of Endor. She pops up, but then wouldn't make it to where we're at now.
Yeah. So, I really like her. Obviously, people are already in that, like, all over Twitter, like, it's Rey's mom kind of thing, and it's like, can we not? can we just lay off the Rey's parents thing? It's like, and you're Rey's parents, and you're Rey's parents, and everybody's Rey's parents.
Yeah, in all honesty, she does look like a Kenobi, which could be Rey's mom. I'm sorry, that was a bad joke.
I
don't know. I like her a lot. I think she's a great actress. It's all a matter of what role is she playing? How big of a part is she going to play? Obviously, the big thing of this is that we have no Laura Dern's General Holdo. Like, she's no longer with us. With Leia and Carrie Fisher, we're not going to have, like, a significant role there, because obviously she passed. We're not going to be able to have her take the lead. There's no real older female character in the Star Wars universe right now who can step into that position. So someone like Kerry Russell coming in gives like an older female figure to kind of continue on that legacy, so to speak. You know, obviously we've still got Rey, we've still got Rose, but yeah. I don't know. I think it makes a lot of sense for why they're introducing her. But like, it just remains to be seen what part she's actually playing.
She can easily be a leader in the Resistance who, you know, replied to Leia's call for support.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's very easy for her to fit in as a new character. Because here's the thing is, we know episode 9 is going to have the traditional Star Wars time jump. Through the title crawl, they're going to have some exposition of what's been going on. It's not going to be everyone on the Millennium Falcon and the next like little bit of the story plays out. It's going to be some exposition. The Resistance is going to form back up. Kylo Ren is going to be either, you know, internal struggles with the First Order or have submitted his power as Supreme Leader of the First Order. You know, there's going to be some time lapse there. And this allows Kerry Russell to easily come in as a leading character or a character who will have enough screen time, like you mentioned, Laura Dern, you know, as Emmeline Holdo, or, you know, even as, you know, the same use. Like, remember they talked about this was going to be Leia's film. It could be something where she essentially plays the Princess Leia role. Plus, there's also rumors of Billy Dee coming back as Lando. So, you know, it could be the, you know, a counterpart to Lando's character. Very, you know, so there's lots of things that could have Carrie in there. And she would fit in very easily.
I like the aspect of having another, like, experienced female leader in episode 9. But at the same time, for Kerry Russell, I can see her playing both a good, a bad, or an in-between character. And let's not forget, there is the possibility she won't be human.
That's true.
That's very true.
Well, considering we know Drayden Voss was not supposed to be human, but due to, again, time constraints and budget, they ended up just, you know, they recast him as, you know, and they made him human instead of an alien character. So, kind of fun to think about what they'll actually do with these characters. But we'll learn more, I'm sure, as episode 9 approaches. We still have a year and 6 months until upon it. 18 months until episode 9. All right. Don't worry. We'll have the theme parks and celebration to tide us over. So that'll help us out. Anyway, guys, it is time for our spotlight topic. It has been 10 years since Star Wars The Clone Wars was released. Star Wars The Clone Wars movie was released in theaters August 10th, 2008, with the series starting that October 2008. So, just a quick poll. Caitlin and Donya, did either of you actually see the Clone Wars movie, those three episodes, in theaters? Yes?
Yes.
No,
Caitlin,
you didn't
get to see it.
No.
Donya, I just want to take a trip down memory lane. 10 years ago, summer of 2008, what was your experience with the Clone Wars?
I went with friends, I'm pretty sure, to the cinema. 10 years ago.
I was still in university.
Yeah, I was still in university. I'm pretty sure I went with, like, a load of friends who, because obviously that atmosphere for me was, like, very geeky, very nerdy, definitely went to see the movie with friends. Obviously, I was doing animation at the time, so it was very much in that same vein as well, like, being into animation, going to see animated stuff. So, yeah, I was basically right in the thick of it, right, the exact right audience for it, in terms of, like, it intersecting between, like, Star Wars, a thing that I really loved, and animation, another thing that I really loved. So, yeah, it was a really interesting time in my life 10 years ago.
So I remember 10 years ago, this Clone Wars was the first of two different Star Wars TV shows that were going to be released. And I think we even talked about it, or, you know, other people have talked about it in the past. But during this time, Star Wars was in a very different place. There was another TV series that was supposed to start. I think it was supposed to be a comedy. It was like Star Wars Uncut or something like that, that Seth Green was doing. Think Robot Chicken style. I think it was Star Wars Uncut. It was something else. Or it was a bunch of series of shorts and just a bunch of bad jokes. I remember seeing the trailer and I was really, really disappointed in that. But Clone Wars looked exciting. And I did see Star Wars, the Clone Wars in theater. And they had a midnight showing of it that I went to. And I think I just... I know I went with just Leslie. I couldn't convince any other friends to go. They weren't as big of Star Wars fans as I was. So we went to the midnight showing in Anaheim, and there were a couple people dressed up. You know, I had a Star Wars shirt on, stuff like that, but it was, I think there was all of like 20, 30 people in the theater. Like, it was not your typical, like, you have to remember, the last Star Wars that was in a movie theater at the time was in 2003 with Revenge of the Sith. So, and Revenge of the Sith, I remember actively waiting all day for the first showing. I think there's like an 8 o'clock showing that night, you know, the first showing or something like that. And I remember waiting all day in the sun, news outlets coming to film the line. And that was, you know, that was Revenge of the Sith. So Star Wars Clone Wars, a new Star Wars movie, but animated versus, you know, live action. It was really like, it was like, it's like, all right, Star Wars. Dun, dun, you know, it's kind of like wah wah. It was a little of a letdown. People weren't excited about it. I do remember actively leaving the theater going, I don't know how I'm going to be able to wait till October. I felt like a little kid again. Because it was Star Wars. And it, honestly, those three episodes, that movie was really, really good. It did exactly what you wanted. It kind of showed you the battle of, you know, Clone Wars, and it introduced Ahsoka Tano, who I thought was a really cool character for them to introduce right from the get-go. So yeah, so Donnie, any thoughts on that first movie? And Caitlin, I know you've seen the movie since then.
Yeah, I remember coming out and being like really interested in what would happen next, and also being really interested in what it would be like when, like, they took more time and kind of did it as a whole series versus the movie that we got. But I remember really liking it. I remember coming out and feeling really rejuvenated in terms of like Star Wars fandom, because it had been so long since we'd had something really new like this that we could really like sink our teeth into and discuss, and was actually like properly expanding the universe. So I remember loving it, and I remember loving Ahsoka, and I remember thinking that it really started to flesh out and explain Anakin's change and everything that happened with him between episode 2 and episode 3. So it had so much possibility and was so interesting that I just remember really loving it and coming out and having discussions and just talking about it over and over and over. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely something that was unique because of it being a new format and the way they were waiting for it. So going down to like the movie being released, the wait to the actual episode's release, I remember the first couple episodes really exciting because it had Vader in it, and I remember James Earl, maybe I'm thinking of Rebels. Nope, it was Rebels because it had James Earl Jones come back. But I know they did a couple unique things. They released like the movie itself by itself on Blu-ray, which I have, and they also released a couple episode arcs as separate movies too because they were just so good. But I will say this, Clone Wars was interesting because it definitely started out as a show for kids.
I don't know if you guys noticed the tone and the writing shift on it. Season one is definitely one that I tend to tell people, I'm like, watch season one or you can skip to just season two. Season one is definitely still aimed at kids and a younger audience. And as it progresses, it definitely switches to a more mature tone and a more broad audience, if you will. Starting with season two.
Yeah, I would say, I say it's more of a general audience, as in, it's not at the point where it's not suitable for kids at all. Like, kids would still get a lot out of the show and would still really, really enjoy it and would still get a lot from it. But the way the writing was done and the way that it was framed and the way that it was put together was kind of built in a way that, like, depending on what level you went into it at, you took something different from it. You know, whether that's age, whether that's level of, like, engagement in the Star Wars fandom, your level of knowledge, like, there were things that you could take from it that were different depending on those factors. It was very, very clever the way that it was done. And I think it's the same for a lot of kids shows or shows that are presumed to be for kids. If you actually stop and watch some of them, especially right now, like, a lot of them are built in a way that, you know, depending on when in your life you're watching them, you get something different out of them.
Oh, yeah. No, I think, and I don't think, maybe I'm just old enough to where I catch all the things, but definitely Clone Wars, unlike cartoons from when I was younger, or even cartoons now, you get something different from the age you're watching them. I think, like you said, the writing definitely changed to be more of a general audience writing. It's not like there's hidden jokes inside there that are intended for an adult audience, whereas they would just be passed over by someone younger. And the storylines get really intricate. And the cool part, I think my favorite part about Clone Wars is not that there's 121 episodes that were released, but it really fleshed out the characters that I think some of the biggest criticisms of the prequels was Jar Jar Binks and how easily he was manipulated, or some people say he's just annoying. Speaking of which, I got a really cool Jar Jar Binks t-shirt recently. It was on sale at Box Lunch. It says, "Excuse me!" Sorry, I get excited about stuff like that. But I think it was also one of those things where it fleshed out characters like Anakin Skywalker. When you looked at, like, the original trilogy, and you have Obi-Wan Kenobi talk about, you know, Anakin Skywalker was a amazing pilot, and he fought in the Clone Wars, and, like, this nostalgia of him being, like, a war hero. And then you kind of see what it was in, you know, Attack of the Clones, and then what it came to in Revenge of the Sith. You know something happened in those 3 years' time, but you don't really know anything. And I'll be honest, I think I've said it multiple times in the show, when I think of Anakin Skywalker, I don't think of Hayden Christensen and the Anakin we have in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. I think of Anakin from Clone Wars. Yeah,
because
that's my
same.
Anakin. Even General Kenobi. Obviously, don't get me wrong, like, I love Ewan McGregor, and he did a phenomenal job, but I think Clone Wars, like, when I think of, like, the, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi being the negotiator, you know, that's his, you know, nickname as a Jedi general, you see that in Clone Wars, and you get to develop him as a character. I will say, some of my favorite episodes are ones that don't revolve around them, but just, like, mysticism of Star Wars, and we've talked about them. Because some of the stuff popped back up in Rebels, like the father, son, and daughter, and the, you know, the versions of the Force, and, you know, some of those things. The introduction to Darth Bane and being able to communicate after life through the Force with Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, all those concepts, things that we see in, like, the movies that didn't really have an explanation but were just there, now have a full out fleshed backstory. And that's what Clone Wars had. Caitlin, I know you just watched Clone Wars not too long ago, within the last year or so. What was your takeaway from watching the series as a whole?
So it all kind of blurs together because I think I was in a rush to kind of get through it so I can join in on the conversation. But I remember watching the first, because I think the first episode was with Yoda. And I had no context what to expect for the show, just that it was like the Clone Wars cartoon TV show. And so it took me a while to get used to like the design and the format of the show. And just like, but I did enjoy the fact that it, every once in a while it would jump characters, because it started off with Yoda, but then it tended to circulate around like Anakin and Obi-Wan Kenobi, which I love Obi-Wan, so I was okay with that. But especially the fact when it started to like either adventure into, as you said, like kind of more of more information on the Force itself, but also other characters.
Oh yeah.
And getting to see those, and especially when those other characters like turned around and kind of popped up in Rebels later, because I always love like little subtle tie-ins to things, especially if I'm in on the joke. And then I just overall kind of, like I said, like I kind of binge watched it, so a lot of it blurs together, but like certain episodes come to mind, and even like seeing a young like Ackbar and like all those kind of things. It was just kind of neat, and I appreciated a better explanation of how Anakin went from Anakin to Darth Vader, because they didn't really allow themselves that time to get there in the movies.
Yeah, it gives you like, overall Clone Wars is still the story of Anakin, his Padawan Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan Kenobi and their adventures. But you're right, the very first episode started with, you know, it was interesting because like this show dealt with like, obviously you're in the middle, Clone Wars, they're in the middle of a war, and it's a strategic like battle between Count Dooku and Yoda to come together with, if I remember correctly, it was a Toydarian planet, and it was a strategic planet. To, you know, and the Republic wanted to forge a treaty with the Toydarians, but they were kind of like neutral. And obviously, Count Dooku was saying, "Oh no, form the treaty with us, give us the base off to work off your planet, and so on." And obviously, Count Dooku is using Asajj Ventress, and you know, being all, you know, we know he's Count Dooku, and he's, you know, Darth Tyrannus in the end, but he's obviously deceitful, and you know, tells Ventress to kill the king of the planet, but Yoda is there to protect the king. And even as the droid armies try to stop the you know, the clones and Yoda from reaching to, you know, talk to the king and negotiate, they do it like a Jedi would, like what you would expect. So it is fun to see different characters explored. And I also think that Rebels also did something that the films glossed over and you didn't really see at all. It also humanized the clones, and they also dealt with that issue specifically in the series, where some Jedi generals treated the clones as dispensable, as droids and not people. They are clones. But they also showed the clones as individuals. And I think by the time they got to tackling that topic, which I think is a topic that is way more advanced than what you'd expect for a 12-year-old to really comprehend what they're trying to say. You know, it's one of those things where you already have relationships with Rex and Gregor and Steve, people that we ended up seeing even in Rebels. But, you know, these clones, you know, there's Jedi generals who just say, oh, it's all right if only 100 clones die because we can just make more. Whereas you see the relationships that Anakin and Obi-Wan built with Rex and Cody, that you do see in the movies, but they're kind of there that it's like, oh, Commander Cody. Like, that's not heart-wrenching, seeing Commander Cody turn on Obi-Wan on Apatow in Revenge of the Sith, until you've seen Commander Cody fight alongside, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka and Obi-Wan over and over again. You're like, oh my gosh, they've gone through so much together. And when you learn that, it's not like it's that they are just following orders. There's actually a chip in their head that forces them to obey this Order 66. So it's one of those things where it's really interesting and it really adds a lot of depth to what you know already. So,
well, and I also appreciate the detail, because in that like overarching kind of like build up, even if you didn't get a name of a clone and they were just passing by, they were all still made with some sort of individuality, whether it was just visual because you didn't really hear from them, or even when you did get to see like a glimpse of their personality. The designers all made them different. So it wasn't just like a show, they also had it like in the background as well.
Mm-hmm. So there were 6 different seasons. Obviously, each season dealt with different things. We've talked a little bit about season 4 previously on this show. And I do want to mention it. Season 4 is also the season where we get the return of Maul, which was important because we see Maul in, spoiler, Solo. And this is also where you end up getting a little bit more about that character and kind of what happened to him. Before we see what happened to his conclusion in Rebels. So it does deal with a lot of different things, a lot of different story threads, and it's all considered canon. So if you're someone who like says, oh, what's canon? What do I really need to know about the series, about Star Wars, if I'm a fan? Definitely Rebels or Clone Wars and Rebels is something you want to go ahead and make sure you are aware of and you've seen. I will say this. What did you guys think about, obviously, we've gone through 5 seasons, and then we got season 6, which was a truncated season. So the first 5 seasons actually aired, and I know, Caitlin, you didn't actually see the first 5 seasons when they aired. They aired in the U.S. on Cartoon Network, and I don't know where they aired on in the U.K., Danya. You might be able to tell me that. Did Danya melt?
Maybe she did.
Okay. Well, they aired in the U.S. On Cartoon Network, but the 6th season was released on March 7th in 2014 on Netflix. So the entire season was released in one fell swoop, which was interesting. So I was able to binge watch, you know, the lost missions, and it was only 13 episodes. And I will say, I don't want to say it was my favorite season, but there was some really cool stuff, and like in that specifically, where they introduced things like Yoda talking to Qui-Gon and how Qui-Gon became one with the living force, like that idea that we saw from Phantom Menace, and also why we hear Qui-Gon's voice with Rey, and how, you know, Obi-Wan is able to come back to talk to Luke, and how Yoda comes back to talk to Luke multiple times. So it's kind of nice that they set the seed there, like how it happened. And it was also really cool that Liam Neeson actually voiced it too, so it's like Qui-Gon came back, which is pretty cool. We also got to see a little bit more of Force ghosts in the form of Sith. They're not the same type of Force ghosts that we see in Star Wars, but you know, we have Darth Bane that showed up, and we also learned a little bit about Master Sifo Dyas, which was interesting that we learned about this in season 6, and we know about Master Sifo Dyas from the original release of Attack of the Clones. Master Sifo Dyas was, you know, the one who ordered the clone creation and how he was manipulated to actually order that creation. So I definitely think season 6 was a really pivotal storyline, but it was released all at once on Netflix. And the reason for that was because of the Disney purchase of Lucasfilm. So they carried on. So, Caitlin, I have a question for you since I know you did this. Did you watch any of the extended stuff after the series was over? I know, Caitlin, I know, Danya, you did.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I watched it because it was part of, like, I watched all of it on Netflix, right?
Well, the extra stuff, so essentially there's 13 episodes. The series of Clone Wars ends with the episode Sacrifice, which is on Moriban, formerly known as Korriban, or they're both the same thing for canon purposes. Korriban, if you play any of the video games or read any of the legacy books, Korriban is the homeworld of the Sith. Moriban is what it was called in Clone Wars. This was a decision made by George Lucas. He didn't want people to confuse Korriban and Coruscant, even though one is a C and one's a K. And I can see that they're similar in sounding, so he changed it to Moriban. And they basically explained it off as over the thousands of years, because no one ever visits the planet, it's been renamed, kind of like we don't use certain things like the as often as we use the and stuff like that, where things get changed over time. So it's now Moriband, the Sith homeworld. Yoda visits it, and that's where it ends, and we get to see some Sith Lord stuff, and I don't want to dive into a specific topic, but that's the season finale of it. But there is actually, because the series was cut short, there's actually 8 additional episodes in story reels that were released on YouTube. 4 being the Crystal Crisis on Upatau, and then Bad Batch story reels, which is the clones kind of learning about the Bad Batch of the clones and their bad chip. We learn a little bit more about what was going on there. But so those 8 episodes were not ever produced and actually put together, but they did have story reels of them already. And then another 8 became the Dark Disciple novel. If you read the Dark Disciple novel, which is canon, is Asajj Ventress, that was actually, those 8 episodes were turned into a novel by, is it Christy? Yeah, by Christy Golden. So that became an actual book, part of canon, even though it was originally supposed to be a Clone Wars series. And like Evan mentioned a while ago, when we did our Darth Maul episode, the Son of Dathomir comic series, which is 4 books, would have also been a story arc. And that kind of sets up that Maul then die when he did his final encounter with Darth Sidious in Clone Wars. So they definitely had a lot more planned, and I think it probably would have been planned for even more than just the season 6 stuff that they released elsewhere. But with the purchase of Disney, they ended up moving to Rebels instead. Danya, do you wish they would have kept going with Clone Wars before they stopped, or are you happy with the way they ended it?
I think I'm happy with the way that they ended it, because I really like what Rebels did, like, a lot. I really like what it brought to the Star Wars universe, and I feel like if Clone Wars had kept going, I'm not sure how much of Rebels would have played out the way that it did. And I really like Rebels the way that it was. Like, it wasn't perfect. It had its flaws, but I really liked what it did. And I think, I feel this way with a lot of shows. A lot of shows just keep going for the sake of going, and they don't always end when they should. That was one thing I also really liked about Rebels, was that it had, like, a finite end to it. Like, they knew the story that they wanted to tell, they knew where they were starting, and they knew where it ended. So they kind of followed that through. With Clone Wars, I feel like the way that it was set up was that they would have just kept going. And going and going and going until they were, told to stop, maybe. But there was no guarantee that they would have been told to stop. Like, I like that. I feel like it still had more to tell, but I'm not overly disappointed that it ended when it did.
Yeah, I feel like it could have gone for at least another season and a half. I am happy the way Disney did it, and it's interesting because Rebels or Clone Wars, when they ended it, it was, like I said, when Disney purchased it, and I think they did a good job of taking back and looking at what they were going to do as a whole for the franchise, because if it wasn't for them taking a step back and essentially saying, okay, we need to stop this so that way everything going forward, the creation of the story group to say, like, what's canon, what's not canon, what can we keep, what do we have to get rid of to be able to tell our own stories. I think it was a good thing because, you know, if they kept going on, you know, Clone Wars had a lot of things that weren't, I would say that, you know, you could almost say, like, that might not have been canon. But they kept everything in it canon. And it was made, you know, it was the basis of, like, what do they keep in the canon kind of universe. And it was actually where we had most of it, because all the books were retconned as legends and stuff like that. So Clone Wars became kind of like the Bible, if you will, of all the Star Wars lore and stuff that actually is was kept in the new story, you know, in the new story arc. So I think it played a critical role in the sequels. And actually, I've seen a lot of articles talk about how the sequel trilogy pays more homage to the prequel trilogy than it does to the originals. And I'm okay with that, not just because of I actually like the prequels, but that Clone Wars was just so well done that it's okay for the sequel trilogy to follow that kind of formula a little bit better. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does make sense.
Okay. Guys, I'm really excited to see Clone Wars 10-year anniversary at Star Wars Celebration. I know, Danya, you'll be there. You'll probably be there with me.
But it's San Diego. It's San Diego Comic-Con, right?
Oh, is it San Diego Comic-Con?
Yeah, I thought they were... It's a big Hall H panel. Yes,
it is. It's at San Diego Comic-Con. Why did I think it was Celebration? It's because I'm not going to San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm really sad that I'm not going. That's what it is. You're right. It is at San Diego Comic-Con. It is... Oh, jeez. That's coming up really soon. Of course.
It's in July.
Yeah, it's in July. So, that's why. Because they're celebrating it this year, not next year when Celebration is. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So, 10-year anniversary is at San Diego Comic-Con. I won't be there, but I'll have friends there. Man, now I'm really sad I won't be there. But definitely, check out the Comic-Con panel if you go. If you haven't watched Clone Wars, feel free to hit us up. We're happy to talk about it. I love talking about Clone Wars. And watch it. It is an amazing show to watch. I can't wait to introduce it to my daughter. Because I want her to see Ahsoka and have a strong female Jedi character to follow around. Because, you know, Jedi lightsabers are awesome. And I can't battle with her.
I miss Ahsoka.
It's Ahsoka, right? All right, guys. Anything else about Clone Wars and it being around for 10 years now?
Makes me feel old.
All right, guys. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. And as always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.